On this episode of the Formula Fun Podcast, Caitlin and I discuss and review a real-life race, the 2020 Austrian Grand Prix, which just took place today. I hope you're as excited as we are to be back racing finally, and you'll stick around and hang out. For joining me again.
You're welcome.
For the second time in 3 days.
Wow.
Big time. Mm-hmm. We're big time now.
Sure.
The season is back. We're back.
For now.
For now. No, for good.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to talk about. We had a race today.
Mm-hmm.
We were recording on the day of a race.
We're doing good.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
We had a big Formula One day today. And so much to talk about. I wanted to just kind of talk about some of the bigger storylines with you and then kind of go team by team through the race. How's that sound?
That sounds good.
Cool. So Austria, first race of the season, postponed season. We've talked about all that already and everything. The first thing worth talking about probably was that there was a lot of contention, maybe even controversy, might be the word.
My favorite.
About whether or not drivers should have knelt.
Kneel?
I think I said that knelt? Correctly. Should have knelt.
Kneeled, knelt.
Is that right?
You can say knelt.
Like dealt?
I don't know, like plural. For some reason, that feels weird.
No, verbs don't. Past participles don't have plural forms.
Okay.
Anyway, it's kind of like dreamt. It seems like dreamt.
Yeah.
Like you're supposed to say dreamt, but nobody says dreamt.
Right,
everyone
right.
just says dreamed.
We say slept, though.
Anyway, so should the drivers have knelt? And if they didn't, are they racist?
At what point were they supposed to be kneeling?
Yeah, so I actually missed all the kneeling. I just saw it on Instagram and Twitter and stuff. I think it was during the national anthem.
When were they playing the national anthem?
Right before we tuned in. So, like, we tuned in this morning.
But it was, like, the Austria national anthem, right?
Right. It was the Austrian national anthem.
Probably Austria's has issues with race too, I guess.
Well,
but
I don't think it was a protest against Austria.
Well, I guess I. Then why do it during? It just seems like, isn't it like specific? Like you kneel during the American national anthem because you're a citizen of the country and you're like making a statement on how you feel about your country at that moment?
Well, that's like a good question, because I think that's why it was kind of confused and confusing.
Yeah, right.
For a lot of these people. And for them, I think a sticking point was kind of nationality and ethnicity.
Yeah,
for them a little
exactly.
bit. They're like, in my country, kneeling during the national anthem means something different than it
yeah.
means in the United States.
I mean, I could see they should have divorced it from the national anthem part. They should have been like, and we're going to take like a moment of silence, or we're going to take a knee in honor of
right.
the Black Lives Matter movement, like before the race, but not like during someone's anthem.
Yeah.
Unless it's like you're a citizen. I guess it's just, it would feel weird for me to kneel during someone else's anthem.
And Kevin Magnussen introduced another further point of confusion when he said he did kneel, but he was like, I'm not kneeling because of Black Lives Matter, I'm just kneeling because like I'm against racism, I guess I'll kneel, you know, kind of thing,
Whereas some drivers were like, yeah, I'm against racism, but I'm not going to kneel because of my own personal convictions about kneeling during national anthems. But so there was the whole kind of confusion about, like, were you kneeling in support of Black Lives Matter in America, the American civil rights organization? Or were you kneeling in support of Lewis Hamilton? Or were you kneeling in support of, like, anti-racism? Or were you kneeling in support of, like... So I just think it maybe would have been a lot more... It would have made a lot more sense if it had just been clear about what they were doing, why they were doing it.
Yeah, and, clarity.
But also, the McLaren team principal, Andreas Seidel, whom I think has done a great job at McLaren, is clearly very smart, along with he's kind of the Toto Wolff of McLaren. It's one way to think of it.
Well,
you know?
Yeah.
He is that way. He is that. That is a very proper analogy. That's exactly what he is. But... he said that he, and I think this is a very smart way to put it, he said he doesn't like to see such a complex issue, an important issue, kind of reduced to whether you kneel or not.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be just such a simple gesture.
Right.
It's like, are you racist if you don't kneel? Right. And are you anti-racist if you do? That's obviously wrong.
It makes me think of, like, when Black Lives Matter was getting started, the, you know, recent movement with it, how people were doing the, like, blackout on Instagram
thing. Oh, my God,
thing.
I know, yeah.
And I was just like, I'm not going to do that. Like, it felt strange to me. It's just, like, this one... And then people, like, throughout the day were like, actually, don't do it if you actually care, because it's, like, blacking out, like, actual information and, like, posts about... I don't know. Like, it ended up, like, even the people who were, like, supporting... You know, it was just, like, it was one of those things where, yeah, there wasn't a lot of clarity, and it was just, like, this gesture. And, yeah, and it's, like, it would be silly. I think it would just be silly to see if someone posted a black square on their Instagram and be like, that means they are
anti-racist.
Yeah,
or
like,
whatever,
I mean, it didn't really mean
super well-informed about... all the salient issues and all that. I mean, so I think that's probably the best place to leave it. Just, it's okay that some of them did, and I think it's perfectly okay that some of them didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I saw, you know, and Charles, I saw he made, like, a statement about it. Uh-huh. I just kind of skimmed it, 'cause I was like, yeah, whatever. But but I think it's probably good to at least, like, if you didn't, then maybe say something about it.
I think most of them did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other major issue about this race was that going into the race, at least before the race started, was that there were no fans. How did you feel about that? Was that weird for you? That there was just, it was kind of like a video game.
Yeah, it was kind of, it wasn't weird until the podium, I guess, or just, and it was still kind of sweet, or, you know, it was kind of cute, like, because everyone was still, like, the teams were excited.
Yeah, yeah. You got to see them in their own bubbles.
Yeah. But, right. But that did feel weird. It was like, wow.
To drive by empty stadiums. And...
Well, the driving didn't, I don't know. I mean, I guess it was really just at the end when they get out of the car and
there's
not,
nobody,
like,
cheering
big.
Or anything. Yeah,
yeah. That was when it was weird.
And of all sports, you can probably get away with motor racing not having fans more than a lot of other sports, because just watching on television, your focus is so much on just the action on the track that it really doesn't have that much to do with.
It's so dynamic, and over, like, such a wide space, there's lots of parts of the track that wouldn't really have.
You don't
fans
even see fans anyway, right?
Anyway, yeah.
I did think, though, that this was an unfortunate place to not have fans, especially because of the huge draw that Max brings. You know,
yeah,
there's always those, like.
Good.
Yeah, no kidding. We'll get into that, I guess, because of his horrible day today. So, speaking of the day today, that's a good little impromptu segue. Another point of interest about today's race, and we'll talk about this as we go through team by team, was just the race was rife with mechanical issues.
Just shenanigans.
Yes. I think 7 total people... failed to finish.
Wow.
It may have even been more than that.
What,
upon
do you
final
think they were just, like, rusty, or, like, is the first race always like that?
No. Okay. I mean, the first race you always are kind of shaken off a little rust, you know, like, you can think back the last 2 years to Australia, where Haas had pit stop issues that cost them dearly and whatever. I'm sure you remember that. The look on your face tells me you remember that.
I'm trying to remember.
But those kind of things. So, you know, it's not unusual to have strategy errors or, I don't know, like little... Yeah, it's not unusual to have more shenanigans at the beginning of the season than you otherwise might.
But yeah, it was like a rainy day race, but no rain.
Yeah, I know. It was like Germany last year, where everybody crashed out and like Kvyat got third or whatever. However that happened, or Stroll got third or whoever, whatever. No, I don't remember.
It was Kvyat.
So aside from the fact that all the mechanical issues occurred and it made for a crazy race, what I'm wondering is that interesting? Is that fun? Did that make it fun? You know, was that like, were you more entertained by constantly being like, what? No, what's happening now?
You know, it was more entertaining for me as just like a...
Because you seemed pretty frustrated the whole time.
I was frustrated.
All your favorite drivers, Max,
everyone
Daniel.
I care about, got knocked out. But then at the end, I was pleased with the result. I probably would have been just... But it's interesting because the alternative is that everyone gets in place
and then they kind of just drive around. There's a few overtakes and then like 2 hours later they finish.
So it is kind of interesting when people drop out and then the safety car is coming and
kind of bunch people back up.
It held my attention. At least I don't know if it was good or bad. It probably wasn't like make for great racing, but it held my attention.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think at first I was kind of naturally frustrated by all the mechanical issues because it's just like, well, you don't really like want mechanical issues to be the deciding factor in a race. Especially because like, well, Haas, like Kevin Magnussen looked like maybe he might score points for a little bit. And that would have been a huge day for Haas to start the season in the points. And then all of a sudden his brakes just give out. And you're just like, well, that might mean literally that Haas doesn't survive in Formula One next year.
And it
went from being like, maybe Haas survives as a Formula One team to maybe there's no more Haas on the grid just because Kevin Magnussen's front brakes went out, you know?
But it's not just because, I mean, it's not just going out indicative of
Right. Of course you're right. But so in that sense, it's a little bit frustrating and you don't like, there's people who are kind of pine for the nostalgic days of like, oh, well, reliability used to just add, you know, in a whole nother layer of intrigue to Formula One. Reliability was just a thing. You never knew who was going to finish and who didn't.
Oh, like it, that used to be more common?
Oh, yeah. In like the 70s and 80s and just like cars just blew up all the time. And they just didn't finish the race and you would just have all kinds of crazy results because of the reliability issues. And now cars are just super reliable. Everybody finishes. And
We thought.
Yeah. And so at first I was kind of thinking that like, well, we don't want to go back to the days where cars are just really unreliable and we're throwing up all these crazy results because that's just not competitive. That's not the nature of the sport. But looking back on it, I was like kind of like you. I was like the whole time I was like, what's going to happen now? You know, I can't believe, you know, it was more entertaining because
and I think it's like the drivers that are left, it's not kind of like the good results are like handed to them, maybe some of them because it's like
right,
but like they have to be skilled enough to like dodge cars and like use safety cars to their advantage and
take
like
care of their tires
keep their head
restart,
you know, like
not lose
cool.
positions on restarts.
Right. So it's still kind of impressive, like the people that made it to the end, you know.
Speaking of these restarts, this wasn't in the notes, but I'm just spinning my wheels here, riffing. In NASCAR, they have what are called competition cautions. So like every 25 laps, they just bring out a safety car, basically.
What?
No matter what. Why? Even if there's, because it bunches the team, but it makes the racing better. It's literally a competition caution where a caution would normally be for like wreckage.
This is
they're bunching the field back up for the sake of competition. So how would you feel about something like that in Formula One where the Mercedes piss off 12 seconds into the distance and then in 20 laps they go, all right, come on back. Let's bunch everybody back up again. And I mean, that's maybe a horribly contrived way of racing, but they do it in NASCAR.
Well, I don't know. I guess people use it's.
It would make it more exciting for the fans. It'd make it more frustrating for the teams and the drivers. It would be
frustrating. Well, plus, like, yeah, Mercedes are out in the lead. I want that to happen. But if someone I like,
I know if it's Max or Charles, yeah, and they just a 12-second lead gets erased because of a arbitrary made up caution.
I know it's like not that any of it's really organic anyway because it's all made up rules, but it feels more organic to be like, oh, a safety car, like what's that gonna mean
for... It'll never happen anyway, but it is a question because of its popularity in NASCAR. So speaking of Mercedes being out in the front, that was the last point of interest I had in my notes here. And then we can segue into talking about the teams because Mercedes is the first on my team notes. Is it scary, disappointing, sad, frustrating to just watch Hamilton and Bottas drive away and basically have their own race at the front?
Yeah.
Again.
I just
and hope, will they just win at all 8 races?
Yeah, I guess I just hope the rest of the races aren't like that. I mean, I hope Red Bull gets a handle on whatever happened to Max's car. Because they, I mean, him and, I mean, Red Bull's still competitive if, you know, the car works. And then, and I don't know, I mean, I just, yeah, no, I just hope everyone else kind of gets it together and makes it more competitive, yeah.
Right. So with that being said, and we can talk more about Mercedes right now because we're going to go team by team through the results. I didn't necessarily list like where the drivers actually finished. I just kind of went from the top three teams down, Mercedes, Red Bull, Ferrari, blah, blah. Yeah, sure. So first on the list is Mercedes. Good start from Bottas. Hamilton started fifth because he qualified second, but then had a penalty for not slowing during the yellow flags on qualifying.
Yeah. At the very end.
So Hamilton's weekend was like full of penalties.
I know. He's kind of like...
He's kind of cursed at Austria. Austria is kind of a track... In fact, this is the only track at which he hasn't won in the last like 2 years or something. I don't know. Like he's won here before, but it's been like 2 or 3 years or some stat like that. Him, I know for like... him, that's like a huge deal because apparently he just wins at every track every year or something, you know, but he never goes more than a year without winning at any given track or whatever.
He did. I mean, he made some mistakes and it's so rare to see him make mistakes, I guess. I noticed that. I mean, just, I don't know.
Do you think that's just because he had to come from fifth and had to push the whole race? Whereas if he had started first, he could have managed the race a little bit more.
Maybe. Maybe, yeah, I'm so used to seeing him, like, on pole. And But I don't know. I think I
mean,
feel
he
like
comes
I've,
from behind a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, he comes from behind a lot. And he usually does it pretty gracefully, I guess.
Yeah.
It seems like.
He did not have his best race today.
No.
But he did come from fifth to third and then moved from third into second when Max retired. And then they just kind of ran in formation for a long time.
Yeah.
And it looked like they were intentionally telling them not to pass each other. And it was almost just like two fighter jets out at the front of the field just driving away from everybody. They weren't even trying too hard, you know?
Yeah, right.
So... That goes on for a long time, 30 or so laps into the race. We get a little bit of intrigue between the two drivers. You probably remember because the curbs start to take their toll on the car.
Yeah.
Right. And so this is really funny because they come on the radio and they're like, to Valtteri first. And they're like, Valtteri, you know, we have a sensor issue. We need you to stay off the curbs. And Valtteri doesn't say anything. He's just silent, Finnish style. And then they just switch the radio directly to Hamilton's radio and they give him the exact same message and they go, we're having some sensor issues. We need you to stay off the curbs, please. Stay off the curbs. And Hamilton immediately goes, he's on the curbs. He's going on the curbs too. He's on the curbs more than I am.
He'd said that?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know. When they gave the order to Valtteri, Valtteri was just out in front, just keeping his head down and just driving, driving. And then they come on to, I keep wanting to say Max's, but Hamilton's, Lewis's radio. And he's on the curbs.
He's not even doing it.
He's taking more curbs than me.
He literally said, he's taking more coke than I am.
It's like, who, okay.
I know. But that's the thing, and that actually made this really interesting for a while because, and I liked this about this race was even though the race was like Mercedes drove off in the front, there were lots of little inner team battles up and down, a little like little subplots.
Yeah, there was.
And one of the little subplots was when they came on the radio and told Valtteri to stay off the curbs. Okay, so if Valtteri stays off the curbs, Hamilton's right behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Hamilton's just going to catch him because he's not staying off the curves.
Mm-hmm.
And so Valtteri's like, well, there's got to be a saying for that. It's like a catch 22 or something, right? It's like,
well, it's like Hamilton should stop curbing it first because
he's the one behind.
He's the one behind.
Yeah.
Really?
And he's the one who can see Valtteri's car.
Yeah.
So he can be like, Valtteri's staying off the curbs, so I'm going to stay off the curbs.
Yeah.
But of course, neither of them do stay off the curb. So in addition to their having this one, like, well, I'll stay off the curbs if he stays off the curbs, he stays off the curbs, and I'll stay off the curbs if he stays off the curbs, staying going back and forth. All that means is that their cars are just being rattled to death by these massive curbs.
They're like, seriously, guys.
Yeah.
The cars.
Finally, they get their like lead engineer, their like chief engineer on the radio, which is super unusual to give them both. The final warning that's like, no, we're serious. Stay off the freaking curbs. And then they even said to Lewis, they said, and that means the red and white curbs, Lewis, you know, which are the only curbs that, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was really, I mean, for a while you had Albon running in third, yeah. Perez running in fourth, Norris running in fifth, and the two Mercedes looked like they weren't going to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were going to fail out. And so it was like, okay, is Perez about to win this race or what's going to happen? Yeah. Albon's going to get his first win and then Perez gets second. And
it kept the intrigue.
It did. It was a very intriguing race. So
are the curbs in Austria? Like
they're especially, yeah, okay. They're especially
like,
tough.
Mercedes, are they just going to have like a problem with curbs the whole year? But
okay. Well, no, but some teams do handle them better than others. Okay. It just kind of depends on how their car's set up. But remember, we race again here next week.
True.
So if they curbs can damage anything from like the tires to the suspension to the gearbox, you know, in terms of like levels of severity, right? And gearboxes are restricted in terms of how many you get per year.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have like a severely damaged gearbox just from week one, and now they're racing on the same track again in week two,
mm-hmm.
we might not see Mercedes finish the race next week because of the curbs. So that would be, you know, it'll just be interesting to have the same race, another race at the same
track. I know. It ended up being kind of cool. I'm like, I want to see.
Austria throws up great races.
Yeah, I want to see Austria take two.
Yeah, the Styrian Grand Prix. The one other thing to talk about with Mercedes, and we can come back to this when we get to Red Bull, who's next, and this might be a good transition, a segue, unintentionally actually, to Red Bull, is that once again, for the second year in a row, Lewis Hamilton, and unequivocally it was his fault, takes out Alex Albon when Alex Albon is in position for his first podium of his career.
Hamilton owes him a big one. I mean, that's...
Hamilton needs to buy him like a nice watch.
Yeah.
At least.
At least.
Maybe even just like a swanky Mercedes or something.
Yeah.
He should just have a nice G-Wagon delivered to Alex Albon's house.
Back. I don't want it.
Yeah. I know. So basically, to describe it for the fans out there, I forget exactly which turn it was. It was one of the sort of semi 90-degree turns where there's a heavy braking zone. Albon comes up around Lewis's outside. Albon had just pitted and was on faster tires. He was not only on newer tires, but he was on faster tires, on soft tires, and Hamilton was on medium or hard tires, I forget. And I think medium. And so Alex goes around the outside. He has about half of his car completely in front of Lewis as they begin to exit the turn when you would start accelerating. Lewis begins accelerating. At that point, the acceleration will kind of cause your car to kind of drift towards the exit of the turn, drift outward. At which point it's kind of Lewis's prerogative to either let your foot off the gas and let the guy go around you or steer to the right and ensure that you don't continue to just drift
outward into the car that you can see that is right there mm-hmm. in your vision.
Already overtaking you.
So that was a real shame. And with that, we can transition to Red Bull's day. I mean, just overall a disappointment, I would say, with Albon. Yeah. Albon, not his fault.
I know.
Still hugely disappointing, but not his fault.
I guess, like, I don't know. I mean, he's still...
He did really well. He did everything he needed to do.
Racing day.
Yeah.
It just didn't, it's a shame it didn't pan out to where he got a podium for it.
Yeah, it is a shame.
So, but at least, like, I think, like, the team would is, like, probably happy with him, you know?
I agree with that. I agree with that totally. And I think coming into the year, the very first question is, how is Alex going to respond to Max's challenge, yeah. right? And is he going to be anywhere near Max? Remember, this is the track where Max lapped his teammate last year.
Right. You don't want to that
no
guy.
So for Albon to be basically one or two positions behind Max maximum the whole race is as good as you can wish for. And then when Max retires from the race because of a hydraulic failure on lap 14, which is about all there is to say about his race,
I know, such pretty a shame.
Much boo. Alex held the mantle for the team yeah. and did everything that they could have possibly asked him aside from beat the Mercedes, which is almost impossible. He was close. Yeah. He was close to doing that too. So great, great day for Alex Albon. Max, we just never got a chance to see if his alternative strategy was going to pay off or not.
Yeah. We just,
he started on the medium tires as opposed to the soft.
Yeah.
So it really shaped up to be exciting from the beginning of the race to see whether he could go long on those tires and then be on fresher tires towards the end of the race and all that. But we didn't get to see it. Some kind of hydraulic failure. I don't know what went wrong with this car.
Yeah. Oh, it was like the auto stall something.
Yeah. Anti-stall was kicking in. I think he switched settings on his steering wheel and it got stuck or something. It glitched out. So at first I was, when I saw his car was slowing down, I was really disappointed because I'm really want Honda to be competitive this year as an engine manufacturer, but I don't think this is a problem with the Honda power unit. I think this was just an electrical thing. Yeah.
But I know, I was almost like, maybe he can, like, they can fix it. And
I know,
be, like,
he was, like, scooting the car
down. Yeah,
kind
of. Like, yeah.
Oh, Max.
Trying.
And you know what is so crazy about that? Is that whole time where he's scooting the car down the track, literally inching the car forward with his butt, you know, and the car's jerking its way to the pit lane. He's so good that in the back of my mind, I'm like, all right, so how's Max going to end up still getting like second
come back
in this
time.
Race?
I know. I know exactly. You're just like, maybe he can still do it.
I know. Just somehow they're just going to slap hard tires on him and he's going to go 50 laps on the hard tires or something and just drag the car back up to third probably. Yeah. Somehow I was just totally convinced of it.
I know.
Until I saw him unbuckle and get out of the car and walk away. I was like, this guy is going to finish on the podium because that's how freaking good he is.
Yeah,
which is crazy. He's so good. So we really need Red Bull to be good and not go through this kind of thing every weekend, because Ferrari, our next team, is not going to challenge Mercedes this year. And if it's not going to be Ferrari, it has to be Red Bull. So if we really don't want if we really don't want minimum 8 straight Mercedes victories, then we need our next team on the list, Ferrari, as well as Red Bull, to be competitive. Ferrari, you're the Ferrari fan. Why don't you take it away? How are you feeling?
Do you need to talk? Leclerc had a good day, looking great. Yeah, I know. I was very pleased with Leclerc getting on the podium, but it was just like, it just felt like a whole different team. I'm like, Ferrari is like, McLaren was easily outperforming them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they just felt like a, like a middle team. And
I mean, for a good half the race, they were fifth fastest.
Yeah. Right.
You know, there was Mercedes was faster, Red Bull was faster, McLaren was faster, and at least one racing point was faster.
I mean, we'll just see what the car looks like in Hungary, I guess.
Right,
I mean,
when they say they're going
to
update it.
Things, so hopefully they're able to
And this is a whole nother rabbit hole, but it just makes me wonder how serious of a controversy we would have had on our hands with the Ferrari cheating, quote-unquote cheating, engine scandal had COVID not. You know, that was like right before COVID where we discovered that Ferrari's engine was illegal, and then they had this like settlement that like was kind of underhanded, and like no one really accepted it, and it was like, we agree to not talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
And
I'm like, oh,
and
is that how we get things?
Everyone's
done
like, wait, what?
Here?
Hold on, you know, what? So was
we
it illegal?
We don't
talk
about it. It's not a problem.
Yeah, and then COVID happens, and so everyone becomes all unified and like, let's all get along and do the right thing for Formula One, and so it's kind of like everyone just kind of forgot that
Ferrari
had
illegal engine.
Well,
just didn't they stop
doing
whatever they were doing? Or
they had to last year, yeah.
So, okay.
But that's what I'm saying is it makes me wonder just how significant of a thing it was that they were doing.
Well, it obviously was working out pretty well for them because now their car is not very good.
Right. So, yeah. So the Ferrari race basically looks something like this. I mean, Vettel started 11th.
Oh, yeah. You are the one that needed to talk through your feelings.
I know. I do need to talk through my feelings about Vettel because I did say off pod that my heart, it still beats for Vettel.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's the reason I'm a fan of the sport, kind of, at least a large part of it. I think he's a great person. He's a fantastic champion, and he always composes himself really well, I think. Comports himself well, maybe is the word I wanted there. And going into this year, I thought, you know what? Let's go, Seb. Like, let's go beat Charles and just show Ferrari what's up and be like, you're not going to offer me a contract? Fine. I'm going to show you why I'm a four-time world champion. I'm going to go beat this young kid who doesn't even still wet behind the ears. He doesn't even know what he's doing, you know? Mm-hmm. I've got four world championships. I'm going to go show him who's boss, and you're going to give me a radio message that says move over, and I'm going to turn my radio off, and I'm going to keep driving, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And all that classic Vettel, you know?
Yeah.
And then he qualifies 11th on just pace.
Yeah.
You know, no fail, no technical problems.
And then he, like,
no
dive bombs.
And then
Carlos.
And this was really, honestly, this might be like the point that I end up ranting about for like the next 20 minutes. Because like I said, you know, going into this driver rivalry between Sebastian and Charles this year, it was going to be, how is Sebastian going to respond? Is he going to fly? Is he going to flop? Is he going to answer the call? Is he going to just turn it off and phone it in? This is my last year at Ferrari, maybe my last year in Formula One, period. You know, I'll be the number two driver, whatever, all that. Or, like I said, is he going to drive with a chip on his shoulder? And we needed a race to, like, start to answer those questions. We needed to say, let's watch him in Austria and see what happens. And then it's not like it was moderately good. It's not like it was, it wasn't great.
Yeah,
it wasn't moderately good. It wasn't average. It wasn't moderately bad. It was awful. It was the worst possible outcome for a Vettel fan and for Vettel. The most cliche, the Vettel spin.
Yeah.
The Vettel spin that he's just been doing for the last like two or three years where he can't. The camera cuts and there's a Ferrari spinning around the track and it's Vettel.
It's Vettel, yeah.
And
he's putting other drivers at risk.
In this case, this was a much more egregious driver error than his previous. A lot of the other times, like, he was being overtaken and he was just kind of goosed on the exit and spun the tires and, you know, he just bad touch sort of. This, like I said to you when we were watching, it looked like a video game where you just kind of dive bomb the corner. You're way too far back for an overtake.
Yeah, well, and it's just so awkward because it was like the guy that's taking his place
that
he was trying to overtake awkwardly.
So many little awkward things about it. He was like, I can do it, boo! And his car was like already sliding by the time he hit him. And then like Carlos's car didn't even move, which makes it even sort of more demeaning for some reason when the car you hit just keeps driving and your car goes boop and spins around, you know? And like,
yeah.
So, man, I just, if this is like a sign of things to come for Vettel season. I mean, it's going to be, the answer we're going to get to all those questions is Vettel, just failed tremendously in his final season at Ferrari.
Ferrari didn't extend his contract.
And maybe this is it.
I think they'll feel,
right,
secure in their decision.
So far, I'm sure they do. Leclerc, the other Ferrari driver, did not spin and did not finish 15th or 13th or whatever. He kept it cool. He hung out in sixth pretty much most of the race, and then right towards the end he overtook Perez and overtook Norris, and then ended up second because of Hamilton's penalty.
Yeah.
So the Ferrari looked really good once they got hard tires on the car.
Yeah.
And I mean, I still don't think their car's good. I mean, I don't, they weren't competitive in qualifying, and you're not going to win races if you qualify 5th and 6th and 7th and 8th and 9th and 10th.
Shenanigans. Yeah, I mean, him getting
excuse me,
second place, but
yeah.
But he still, you know, drove well, and
I mean, I am also a Charles fan. I mean, my heart beats for Sebastian. You know, I really do. Like, I just can't help it kind of when, you know, those five red lights go ding, ding, ding. I'm always thinking, like, come on, Seb, for some reason. I just, that's where I'm at when the race starts.
We've all got our
You've our all kind of got your one or two. And of course, there's plenty of other drivers I pull for. We'll talk about them as the show continues, but I was really happy to see Charles get second. And he deserves it. So that was a good race for him. Speaking of good races, McLaren is next. Yay. McLaren seemed to lose some pace towards the beginning of the race after a strong start from both drivers. But then fought strong, mostly against the Racing Points and Ferraris for the whole race. And then, of course, ended up third and fourth.
Super cool how Lando had that fastest lap for that last lap.
So cool and dramatic. And really one of the things that one of the reasons why Formula One rewards like close watching and sticking with a race all the way through and watching it evolve and watching it develop and then watching it right to the end, because Lando had to pull out the lap of his life on the last lap of the race to get his first ever podium. And we were watching the splits, watching the timing, and it was going 5.3, 5.2, 5.1, 5.0, 4.9, 4.8, you know,
to take Lewis's place because of the penalty.
Right. Yeah. So he needed to be within 5 seconds of Lewis, and he really did shave off, you know, 4 or 5 tenths. You know, he was grinding time away from his lap, which is not hard to do.
Really, I mean,
sometimes
impressive.
Laps go the opposite way.
Right. And, you know, well, I could just, it's like, okay, don't mess this up. I have to do this perfectly. I mean, that's not a big opportunity to just mess up spectacularly, but he did.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I am not anywhere near an accomplished sim racer, but I know, just from the casual sim racing I do, there's a huge difference between those laps where you're like, I can take it easy on this lap. I don't even really need to go fast on this lap. I mean, I still got to go. And then those laps where you're like, okay, I got to push on this. I got to really hit every single apex. I got to hit every single braking zone. I got to hit every single acceleration point. I got to push on this lap. This is my one opportunity. And of course, you're just that much more likely to spin.
Yeah.
You're that much more likely to make a mistake. So you're right on the edge. That's why they call it the edge. You know, you're so close to going the fastest possible, but you're also so close to losing it constantly. And so it was so nice to just have that drama right at the end. And for Lando too. I mean, everybody loves Lando.
Yeah,
who doesn't love Lando?
Right. Good for him.
Come on.
Happy to see it.
Yeah. But seriously though, I mean, okay, so Lando out-qualified Carlos and beat Carlos.
I know. Well, last podcast you talked about how it would be awkward if like Lando just like does better, and then this first race is certainly indicated.
Exactly.
It's kind of.
We're already headed in that direction. Yeah. That's one.
Yeah, I mean, Carlos did well too.
Oh yeah, he finished fourth.
But then again, it's just never like. like, wow, Carlos.
You know. No, I mean, if Carlos had finished fourth and Lando had finished like seventh or something, we would be talking about how great of a race Carlos had.
Yeah.
You know, because McLaren's in fourth place is phenomenal.
Right.
McLaren's in third place is especially phenomenal, but yeah. I guess that's just the thing
about Carlos is he just doesn't have that, like, wow factor. I don't know.
He doesn't seem to. Everybody who knows him as a driver talks about how quick he is. And
I'm sure he is. I mean, I'm just biased. I'm just big on personalities, I guess. And he's just like, hey.
Yeah, he does kind of. It's a Spanish accent. I don't know how to do it.
But definitely, that's not it.
It's kind of like that. So great overall day for McLaren.
Yeah.
Wonderful overall day for McLaren.
It was sweet to see how excited they were.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. That was cool. Great start to see. I like McLaren too. It's easy to like McLaren. They have a lot of heritage in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fun to like McLaren. How do you feel if you're Carlos Sainz? How do you feel if you're Carlos today? You got beat by your teammate. You got out-qualified by your teammate, and you lost your teammate on the track. Mm-hmm. So that's both of those are bad. And then I want to add one more thing. Then you see how Ferrari performed over the course of the weekend, which is the team you're joining next year. So you got beat this weekend by the team that outperformed their expectations. And you watch the team you're joining next season underperform their expectations.
I mean, it's just things change so much in the sport. I mean, I probably wouldn't be like, oh my God, I'm terrible and everything is terrible. Or I mean, like if I were him, I would just probably, it'd be easy to just be like, well, we'll just see. We'll see.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
it's just
of one course. Race.
And yeah, and I think him and Lando have good, like, healthy competition.
I do too. And I think he's really strong mentally.
Yeah. So
he's mature.
Yeah. Which is probably.
It goes a long way.
Right. Yeah. Like a really good quality to have. But yeah, I mean, but I know it is kind of funny. I would be like, yeah, like McLaren's are outperforming Ferrari at this moment. So.
Yeah, and so is Racing Point, which is the next team on our list. And one more thing before we get to Racing Point, just about Carlos and Ferrari, is that Ferrari has the kind of gravitas in the sport that just when they come calling and they offer you a contract, you take it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, for most drivers at least.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think there's a lot of calculation about whether, like, well, McLaren is kind of on the up and up.
Right.
And Ferrari doesn't look quite as strong as they used. I mean, mm-hmm. I think Ferrari was like, hey, do you want to drive for Ferrari? And Carlos was like, yes. You know, he didn't, like, I'm sure there was no.
The answer is yes.
There was no, like, hesitation. You know, there's no, like, deliberation probably about that decision.
Yeah.
And I don't think he regrets making that decision still. I don't think he's going to be like, oh man, Lando beat me and Ferrari looks like they're struggling. I think he's just excited about being a Ferrari driver like anyone in history would be.
Yeah.
You know, and people have gone through periods, drivers have experienced periods of Ferrari struggling before, and they're still Ferrari drivers. They go down in history as Ferrari drivers at the end of the day. So, and Leclerc finished second. So,
yeah.
They're still finishing on the podium. But, okay, so speaking of which, Racing Point was battling with McLaren and Ferrari all day, which made for one of the stories of the race, which was interesting. Clearly fastest of the midfield, almost faster, well, not almost faster, faster than Ferrari for most of the race. Checo Perez particularly looked strong all race long, raced in fourth, third, fifth, all race, right until the end where he got passed by Lando. Mm-hmm. Which was a super exciting pass by. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
where they kind of bumped side?
He was being kind of a jerk, wasn't he?
I don't know about being a jerk, but he did what we call turning in on him.
Hmm.
Where Lando makes it to the apex. Checo left too much room. He left enough room for Lando's car on the apex. And so Lando goes and puts his car on the apex. And then what you kind of do as Checo in that situation is you think, well, no, I'm going to take the apex. And then you kind of turn your car into the apex, even though you kind of already missed the apex too late. And so it's kind of like shutting the door on a driver, you know, they say shutting the door on him or turning in on him. So Lando had the clean pass and Checo just, it wasn't super dirty, but you know, if it had ended up like where one of the cars was off the road, then it would have clearly been his fault. He also got a penalty for speeding in the pit lane. and so got a 5-second penalty. So had a great race, but yeah, he got his elbows out a little too sharply and then sped in the pit lane. So he didn't finish maybe as highly as he should have. Stroll, the other Racing Point driver, and heir
to the Stroll throne,
to the team boss role, I guess, eventually in 35 years when he's 38. Stroll had power failure. Yeah. And he looked strong too. That's... I mean, he was top 10, top 5, top 6, 7 or something like that, but then had power failure pretty early on in the race, so he didn't really get a chance to show what he or his machine was capable of. Right now, how do you feel about Racing Point being the third best team?
It annoys me.
Because of the Stroll family and because they're a knockoff Mercedes and
all of those things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at one point it was looking like we were going to have 1-2-3 Bottas, Hamilton, Perez, which would have meant that it was like a Mercedes and a Mercedes clone.
I got up and left the room at that point. Yeah. So I was like, this is stupid and I hate it.
I know.
But then I came back.
Yeah. And then you just kept watching about 30 seconds later.
Yeah.
So that didn't happen, luckily.
Thank God.
I mean, we'll just see with Racing Point. I mean, just...
Yeah, it's not the last of them. I mean, they're going to be...
No, it's not the last we've heard of Racing Point. They're going to just keep getting stronger. That's really... Yeah, I don't know about scary, but I mean, it's kind of... I wish they were more likable. It would be cool if they were like all of the things they are and just like... also likable, because they're like the small team that punches above their weight and has like a tiny budget but makes the most out of it. And like, if you score, if you ranked the teams based on like points per budget, like they would be the champions every year because they're so good for how small of a team they are. You know, like if Haas could be anywhere as close to as efficient and successful as Racing Point, it would be fantastic as a Haas fan. But it just sucks that Papa Stroll is really cringy, and then he like basically bought a team for his son, or that's the way it looks, you know, and then anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. Blah, blah, blah. We have a whole year to rant about Racing Point. The next team on the list is Renault.
Oh, yeah. How'd they do? Not well.
Well, Danny
didn't finish.
Ricardo didn't finish, but Danny looked strong. Yeah. Danny was racing Vettel, Ferrari, for most of the beginning of the race.
Yeah, I know. That was, it's a shame. I know. Well, he fell out pretty soon, though.
Yeah, it was quick. It was like lap 20 or something.
I'm like, Max is out.
I know.
Ricardo's out. Woods.
Yeah, it was quick. It was quick.
What happened with his car?
Some kind of engine failure, power failure. No. It was the car. So, but he had a racy start and looked strong and was chasing down Perez and Vettel and was doing everything that Renault possibly could ask of him. Yeah. I mean, they're not faster than Racing Point. They're not faster. They shouldn't be faster than Ferrari. So to be in sixth or seventh place and racing those cars is exactly what you can expect of Daniel Ricciardo. So you can just check all the boxes for Daniel Ricciardo today. He just did everything he was supposed to do. He just qualified where he was supposed to qualify, was racing where he was supposed to race, taking the battle to the Ferraris, and then his car died. So that was great. What wasn't great was Esteban Ocon.
Oh, yeah. I was like trying to remember who the other driver was.
I know, which goes to show you how not good of a day he had.
Just hanging out with the Williamses.
Yeah, he qualified like 14th or 13th or something, and Daniel qualified 7th, so that's already not good. And then during the race, he just was, consistently 6 or 7 places behind Daniel until Daniel fell out of the race. And then had we not had all this shenanigans... And I was paying particularly close attention to Ocon because I like him and I don't not want him to do well. In fact, I want him to do well, you know?
I don't know it.
I'm not like cheering against him. In other words, I'm not saying this is all like, look, I'm so happy all this happened. Obviously, I don't know why that would be the case anyway, but I was just paying particularly close attention to him.
A new driver,
one of the two new drivers, and also just somebody who has an interesting background, you know, comes mm-hmm. from relatively modest or humble means mm-hmm. relative to most Formula One drivers' backgrounds. And yeah, so he's crazy. Fun to like. He's good. He's a good driver to like, I think. And a lot of people close to him say he's a future world champion. Toto Wolff is his manager. You know, so like he's plugged in. He's big time in terms of being a young driver star.
Well, we'll see.
But man, he had a bad day. And like, I think he ended up finishing like 10th or 11th, but only because all the cars in front of him just blew up and wrecked. I know. Yeah. And at one point, I think I pointed out to you, you were like, Ocon's doing okay. He's in like 11th. And I was like, yeah, but all the other cars behind him have wrecked today. You know, like, so at one point, the only cars he was faster than on pace were Giovinazzi and Latifi.
Yeah, that's
which is like not good if those are the cars you're racing and you and Daniel's up racing like Ferraris. Yeah, exactly. So that already is a story, Ocon versus Ricardo. And if Ricardo continues to just hand it to him like he handed it to him this weekend, then that's gonna look, I don't know how that's gonna look, because on one hand it's like everybody rates Ocon. Everybody talks about how great Ocon is. And Daniel just waxes him. Yeah. And it's just like, here, take your Ocon back.
Yeah.
Something wrong with your Ocon.
Mm-hmm.
It needs replacing.
Yeah.
You know? Or does it make Daniel look like, does it just mean Ocon wasn't as good as we thought? And maybe makes Hülkenberg look even better.
I know. Like, maybe,
you know, Hülkenberg sitting at home going, I told you this wasn't as easy as you thought.
Maybe that's a big smile on his face and his Instagram, but he's just like, yeah, let's see how Ocon does. Yeah, it's great.
I know. Did you see his Instagram post? He's got a little bit, I mean, not a little bit. He's got a massive chip on his shoulder, I think. He's got like a whole kitchen table on his shoulder. But he was like, come on, F1, entertain me.
I know.
It's like almost like,
I'm just over it.
It was almost like, let's see what you got.
Yeah.
Are you even good anymore? You know, I think he's kind of one of those guys. Like, I think that was coming from a grumpy place. I think.
Yeah. I kind of like it. It was kind of cheeky.
It was cheeky. So anyway, basically good day for Danny, failure. And then not good day
for
Ocon. Haas is next on the...
Disappointing.
I know. Disappointing day for Haas. Now, here's my initial takeaway from Haas was that K-Mag looked good.
Yeah, he did look good until he just like stopped braking.
Well, that wasn't his fault. But he started like 14th and then quickly overtook like three cars.
He was in the points, you know? Wasn't he?
He was close. I think he would have ended up in the points with all the shenanigans and everything had his car just not failed.
Yeah, that's really too bad.
And so, man, again, like I said earlier, it just goes from looking like Haas has a lifeline with a possible points finish in their first race back to massive technical failure and both cars retire. So basically what happened...
Well, didn't Grosjean crash?
We'll get to Grosjean in a second because there's something worth talking about Grosjean today as usual. But at one point, Vettel, I believe, who was it? Somebody was overtaking K-Mag. I wish I could remember who it was. Anyway, somebody was overtaking K-Mag down the inside of a right-hand turn, and it looked like K-Mag just forgot to brake. He just kept going straight, and then finally his car kind of spun and stopped. And basically what ended up happening was that his front brakes, or one of the two front brakes, went out, and so he only had rear brakes, so obviously the car's not going to stop as soon.
Yeah, thankfully there wasn't a wall there.
I know, and thankfully not all 5 notes. Yeah, Haas has a brake failure in both of their cars.
Yeah, I can't imagine... Not like
any other kind of failure.
Right. Brake failure. Going that fast and like having to put your all and like driving on the edge and all that and just like...
You're not sure if the brakes are going to work.
Yeah, like even having a shadow of a doubt that your brake like might not work. I would just I like... Know. I'm like, I cannot do this. I mean, well, I couldn't do it for 1,000 reasons. Right. But.
Yeah, I know. It's wild. But I'm a K-Mag fan. You know that?
Yeah, and he's cool.
I think there's a lot about him that's just to celebrate as race fans, worth celebrating as race fans. I hope he sticks around in the sport. I hope if Haas is gone, he's not gone too, you know. Whereas Grosjean might be worth losing, unfortunately. We'll get to that in a second. But so that was a huge disappointment, K-Mag's race. Huge disappointment. It would have been nice to see him end up in the points.
Yeah.
Grosjean, the other Haas driver, French driver, French-Swiss driver,
Grosjean. What's this about him being Swiss?
Well, he was like born in Switzerland but lives in France. He has dual citizenship. Oh. And so he likes races under a Swiss flag, but he's French. He's like, he's just equally both sort of. Remember when we listened to Beyond the Grid and like a big discussion point? We were driving through North Carolina and we were listening to Beyond the Grid. We were listening to Grosjean's episode and he was like, do you feel French? Do you feel Swiss? And he was like, there's parts of me that feel Swiss because I'm always on time and I'm very tidy and very neat. And he was like, but there's parts of me that feel French because I'm passionate and like to cook and things like that. And so he's
okay. He's like, I'm just like, I'm a lot of things.
He's an onion.
Yeah.
But so Grosjean, okay, so early into the race, so Grosjean did have to retire for the same reason that K-Mag retired eventually.
His brakes?
Brake failure.
Okay.
But before that, there was a point in the race where Grosjean is coming around, I think turn 4, which is a long right-hander. And he just gets into the gravel and loses the car, spins, which is just pure driver error. Mm-hmm. That's just a big mistake. You get too far off the track. Your back tire hits the gravel. You lose traction. You lose the back of the car. You spin the car. Mm. That is just 100% driver error. So I'm not saying what they do is easy, but right. Grosjean was the only person to do that today.
Right.
Grosjean was the only person to put his car in the gravel and spin his car just unforced error. It's like hitting the ball into the net, you know. Right. Part of the reason, by the way, why people like Austria is because it's a punishing track like that. It's a quote-unquote old school track where if you do get just off the track, you're punished.
Yeah, not like the American one.
Right. I was just like gonna say, not like Austin where you get off the track and you just keep going and then just swerve back onto the track.
Yeah, that annoys me. Yeah. I want there to be consequences.
Exactly. Good. So you're a fan of the old school tracks. Like Hungary is the same way where it goes track, curb, grass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you get off the curb, then you're going to spin. You're going to have an off, basically.
I guess maybe the new tracks are safer.
They're meant to be safer. I mean, that's the idea. These old school tracks are way more dangerous.
That's good.
So, but get this. So Grosjean, I'm watching and Grosjean has this off. He spins the car, turn 4, comes back on. And then a few laps later, you hear them that he's been shown the black and white flag, which is a penalty flag. You know, there's all different kinds of flags they wave to communicate with the drivers. There's like a yellow flag, white flag. Right. Right, exactly.
They're like, oh, here he comes. Wave the flag. Yep,
100%. 100%.
What if two cars are right next to each other? How do they know which car it's for?
I don't know. They know somehow.
They're just like pointing at
Grosjean. And they can do it from the radio, too. They can radio to him. That,
like, that flag's for you, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. So the black and white flag is the last flag you're shown before you're kicked out of the race.
Oh, wow.
And Grosjean got the black and white flag for driving standards. I've never heard of that before. You get black and white flags for like making super dangerous moves on people or like running someone off the road or like really.
But I just didn't notice
he drove so badly today that they had to warn him lest they kick him out of the race because he was driving so badly.
Really? Did you notice? Like him.
Well, no, because the camera's not always on him, you know?
Yeah.
And it's subtle, you know, it's just exceeding track limits. So this consistently is like exceeding track limits, you know.
FIA. FIA, like watching all the cars and being like, dude,
you remember how we talked about during qualifying how they can have two wheels outside the white lines but not four?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so if Grosjean has four wheels outside the white lines over and over and over and over, there's like, dude, there's only so many times we can penalize you and warn you.
Right.
We're showing you the black and white flag. You do it again.
Yeah,
and
it's you have like to retire the car. In a normal job, like if you're put on like a performance review or something, like you're like, okay.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of crazy. I mean, I'm
surprised he's just been through so much.
And, yeah.
I mean, he's just had so many struggles. Like, I don't know how he like keeps getting in the car and like driving. And
I think he's kind of one of those people that, I don't know. He's got to have some serious, mentally he's been challenged, probably still challenged, you know, to stay positive at this point.
Yeah, and it's be, admirable, I mean, I guess, in a way.
It is. He hasn't
given up, you know.
Yeah. And kind of like I was saying to you during the race too, is I think the reputation Grosjean has among like team owners and drivers and personnel is way different than the reputation he has among like casual media observers and fans and stuff, where they like think he's kind of a clown.
Race to Survive or whatever.
Right. Drive to Survive. Survive to Drive.
It's just like cringy.
Yeah. I do think that most people think of Grosjean as a very good driver, technically sound driver, smart guy, leader, experienced, fast over one lap, you know, as in fact, a lot of people say if you were to rank the top five drivers, you know, he might be third or fourth in just one lap. If you put everybody in a Mercedes and just like everybody gets to drive Lewis's car, let's see who can go the fastest in it.
Oh, they should like, do that.
I know, that'd be fun,
for,
right?
For like charity or something.
Right. So anyway, that's Haas. And again, just kind of to wrap up, it's not looking like we might see Haas around for very much longer in the sport in general.
Well, let's see what happens next week.
Yeah. Two teams kind of back to back here that I don't have a lot to say about. AlphaTauri. Kvyat wrecked out somehow. He had like a tire suspension failure.
Gasly, I just didn't even notice at all. Like, he was like a ghost. Like,
didn't
a complete non-entity.
Did he have a failure too?
I don't think he finished.
Yeah, I mean, they were running in the points the whole race. They were like 8th and 9th right behind each other. Gasly a little bit ahead of Kvyat the whole time. I mean, it was, they did what they were supposed to do, quote unquote. Yeah. You know, I mean, for this junior Red Bull team to finish where they finished is about what you should expect. And that's kind of why there's not super interesting things to say about AlphaTauri today.
Moving right along.
Moving right along to the other team that sounds exactly like AlphaTauri, Alfa Romeo. Excuse me.
They weren't good.
They were also not good. They were very slow.
Very slow.
My note here just says Gio slow.
Did Kimi just like pull over and just stop driving and take a nap or something?
No, remember Kimi's tire went flying
off. Oh my god, that's right. I was like, I remember Kimi didn't finish. I don't remember what happened.
Kimi's like, I'm just going to stop, guys. I'm just going to get a little boring. There's a Williams right behind me, so I'm just going to let him by or something.
Yeah, he's just like chilling.
Yeah, so.
And his tire flew off.
But yeah, Giovinazzi's not good. I think his lack of talent
it's your lack of talent
is
the issue.
Is almost masked because he's on such a non-entity of a team. Mm-hmm. Alfa Romeo manages to just be kind of like, they're not good, but it's kind of
not trying to be good.
Yeah, also, it's almost like it's like not. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's not a big deal that they're not good.
Yeah,
it's like a tragedy that Williams isn't good. Yeah. It's like it's tragedy that Haas isn't good. They're about to just like leave the sport. Right. And meanwhile, Alfa Romeo is like worse than Haas.
Yeah,
almost as bad as Williams, and they're just like, you know.
Yeah,
we look good.
I like that. It doesn't stress me out like the other ones do.
I mean, I'm sure they want to be good. It's they have good Ferrari engines. It's not a good year to have Ferrari engines.
I guess they don't get any screen time. We're never like seeing the Alfa Romeo like team looking at the screens or anything. We never see that.
Yeah, that's a whole other point of discussion too, is like the race director, TV production people who like, how do they choose what to put on screen?
Right.
You know,
because we really
I think they did a pretty good job today in terms of, like, seeing the battles throughout the midfield. You know, yeah. Oh, these people are about, like, Ocon is catching up to so-and-so, Ricardo's battling Vettel, you know. They don't just show the Mercedes driving around at the front by themselves the whole time. And...
yeah.
Okay, so that's all from Ao. Kimi's tire went flying off. I guess they didn't secure the tire, and he was going through, like, turn 8, and then his tire just kept going, and his car stopped, and the tire didn't. Which is really, honestly, goofy and funny to look at and all that and remarkable, but really, really dangerous.
Well, that's why they, like, timed the car now.
Right, there should be a tether. I don't know why it wasn't tethered to the car, but that's one of the most dangerous possible things that can happen in Formula One is when one of those tires just starts flying down the road. And, I mean, it didn't end up in the stands or it didn't end up over a barrier, but we're today's a day where you're just lucky. It's extra good there weren't fans there because for a tire to just be spinning towards the barrier and you're not really sure how or when it's going to stop is...
yeah, I didn't think about how it could injure, like, spectators.
Yeah.
Not just other cars, but, that's...
notoriously, the worst motorsport disaster in history was at Le Mans when... a Mercedes car wrecked into the grandstand. You might have remembered it killed like 80 something people or something, you know, and Mercedes like stopped racing after that.
They
were just like, we're not even going to participate in this sport anymore for a while. And
I mean, God, can you imagine?
So anyway, so super dangerous when that happens. Hopefully we don't see too many more dangerous things, knock on wood, this year. Williams, the last team, alphabetically and just aerodynamically, however you rank teams,
any ranking,
however you rank them, they're the last
quality.
Now, what I do want to say though, because you know, I'm a George Russell fan.
Yeah,
I do like George, and he looked. He looks like a schoolboy. He just looks, they're so young, you know? It's just so hard for him. Like, what should he look like? You know, like, it's hard. It's not like he's going to look like a grown man, you know? I mean,
well, that's
like,
okay. I don't
He just has like a little boy haircut.
Yeah,
is kind of what you mean.
Boy haircut, yeah. That's all.
Yeah. But anyway, so Russell, at one point was 18 seconds ahead of Latifi.
That's a lot of seconds.
Yes, for a lap that only takes a
like
minute.
Imagine like a car go like wing, and then like you have to wait 18 seconds, and then the next car is like wing.
Especially in Formula One, where like tenths of seconds are the measurements that we deal in. You know, so
he's driving the heck out of that Williams car.
He's obviously extremely good, and then his car stopped, and so there was another. Yellow flag safety car that bunched the field back up for Russell's car because he had to stop in a dangerous part of the track.
Is George Russell committed to Williams for next year already?
I don't know. And in fact, I kind of want to say no, because there is already discussion of Mercedes' handling of Bottas's contract and whether or not they will retain him again. Just kind of maintain the status quo or bring in George Russell.
Oh, wow. To Mercedes. God, to go from Williams to Mercedes.
Well, Williams is a Mercedes feeder team.
I guess didn't Bottas do that?
Yep.
He went from Williams to Mercedes?
Yep. And so did Nico Rosberg. And several drivers have gone from Williams to Mercedes.
I don't see why they would get rid of Bottas, though. I mean, they've got a good
That's really the question at this point, especially because Bottas is shown to be kind of that perfect combination of a number two driver, but can go and do something like win today.
Yeah.
You know, whereas you have a situation like Alex Albon at Red Bull, who's a number two driver, but that doesn't mean he's going to step up and replace Max when Max, you know, Bottas can kind of like, if it's not going to be Hamilton, it's going to be Bottas. It's not going to be like somebody else.
And yeah.
You don't want to put George in that seat too soon.
Yeah.
And just have him just get smashed by Lewis, and then his confidence is killed, and he turns out that he's not as good as he thinks. But I really, really do think George Russell is really, 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 really special. That's just that's what all the other drivers say about him. Yeah, that's what all the people who know what they're talking about say about him. And, you know, one of the highest forms of praise, I think, is the other drivers. When someone like Charles Leclerc and Lando Norris and they're like, yeah, I'm good. But you know who's like really good? George.
Mm-hmm.
He's always been better than me. He's always been faster than me. Like mm-hmm. since we were little kids, mm-hmm. you know, I've raced against him my whole life and he's always been better.
Mm-hmm.
He's still better. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, that's high praise coming from Charles Leclerc, coming right. from, you know, like, so look out for George Russell, everybody, because he's really good. Latifi is really not good, it yeah. looks like. He qualified 20th. He was in 20th for most of the race, way behind everybody. He ended up mm-hmm. finishing somewhere because of shenanigans, don't know. But this is, it's almost kind of a shame for George because he beat Kubica last year.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, well, yeah, that's something. But Kubica like kind of only had like one arm, and he was like out of the sport for like a long time.
Yeah,
and
so, but he's a good driver, or was a good driver.
Exactly, exactly. And so, but and then George like easily beats him, mm-hmm. resoundingly beats him.
Yeah.
And then now they give Latifi to George Russell, and George Russell is just gonna eat him, mm-hmm. you know. And so, an analogy I've heard is kind of like young boxers. Like, you don't really want to challenge a young boxer too early in their career.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just feed them these people, like, here, mm-hmm. just beat this guy, just beat this guy, just beat this guy, and just get their confidence, like, really high, mm-hmm. you know? But on the other side of that coin is we really haven't seen George Russell beat anybody yet, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't seen him challenged in, like,
drama-free back in the back.
Yeah, and, you know, it might be more... We would just have a lot more to say about him as a driver if he were, like, driving in a car like a McLaren beating someone like Carlos Sainz.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably, like, as, like, he'd grow way more as a driver doing that.
Yeah, and it would just look so much better. Everyone would be like, yeah, okay, career. Obviously George resume, is... Really, exactly. So there will come that time. And I think Mercedes is just handling him with kid gloves right now.
Mm-hmm.
They just have the silk and white gloves on when they handle George. And they're just like, okay, next year you're going to dominate Nicholas Latifi and we're going to take lots of his dad's money. And, yeah. you know, very good. Okay, now this year you're going to race against this guy. So long story short, Bottas wins. Leclerc second, Lando Norris third. Ooh, how exciting about Lando's first podium.
Super excited.
Yeah.
Good job.
Very, very, very cool. Final thoughts on the race? Anything else before we go? That was a pretty good little breakdown.
Yeah. No, I'm just excited. I thought it was kind of silly that we were going to race at the same place twice, but I'm excited now.
Yeah, Austria usually provides...
Mm-hmm. I just feel like races. There's unfinished business with
all the failures and so many cars who literally didn't finish.
Literally
unfinished business.
So right. That'll be cool to see it. Take two.
Absolutely. Austria, take two. The Styrian Grand Prix. Don't forget.
Right. That.
So until then, we will see you guys later and look forward to talking to you after another exciting race in Österreich.
Talking at you.
Talking with you. Talking to you. All those things. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Signing off.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.